Blog Talk Radio.
I met my old lover on the street last night. She seemed so glad to see me. I just smiled. And we talked about some old times, and we drank ourselves some beers. Still crazy after all these years. Oh, still crazy after all these years. I'm not the kind of man who tends to socialize. I seem to lean on old. No fool for love songs that whisper in my ears. Still crazy after all these years.
How's it going, everybody? A little, you know, we're starting a little later tonight, Dieter. So I thought we'd come in a little groovy.
Bring those midnight sounds.
Welcome to Puck Chatter Radio, the official audio show of thethirdmanin.com. Also simulcasted here on, well, live on blogtalkradio.com. I am Chris Block, writer, editor, and keeper of thethirdmanin.com here on this Monday night, May the 14th, 2012, 9:01 here in Chicago. And you heard him there just a second ago. It's been a while, and I'm really happy to have him back on. He's about as verbose as I am, and I really enjoy a show that I could sit back and just bounce ideas off someone. And, you know, and kind of take a back seat here. I don't get to do that very often here on the Third Man In or the Puck Chatter Radio, but I'm going to get to do it tonight, I believe, because, Dieter, you haven't been on in a while. You're down there in Florida, and I know you got a lot of Blackhawk thoughts. He is, you know, this is the prime example. Now, this is a terrible introduction. I talked last week about my introduction, but this is a terrible introduction. But this is a guy who is proof positive that being involved with the Third Man In and or Chris Block will not completely ruin your life. Dieter used to be a contributor here on the Third Man in written form, then on the podcast, and now he's gone on to bigger and better things down in South Florida, sports writer at the South Florida Sun Sentinel. He is Dieter Kurtenbach. How you doing tonight, Dieter?
Hey, I'm pretty good, and the verbosity statement is an understatement, to say the least. I've been accused of much grander terms than that, so thank you for just leaving it at verbose.
Things have kind of settled down. There's not a lot that's happened since last week for those of you that listened in when we had, that's a lot of you. I think we had our second most live listeners ever with Sam Fells last week on the show. It was kind of up there as far as our most popular shows ever. So I know that that was a lot of you, but there hasn't been a lot to go on. But there's so much more, I think, to digest. I think the biggest thing, and we're going to start off here in a second, is, Patrick Kane went drinking, and somebody happened to have their camera phone and be coherent enough to use it, and all of a sudden Patrick Kane is publicly enemy number one. I guess we should just go right into it. I guess it's just, I don't know if Patrick Kane is just a victim of there's nothing going on and people have nothing to write about, but Deadspin had somebody, I don't know who it was, but somebody sent some pictures of Patrick Kane having fun on Cinco de Mayo weekend in Madison, Wisconsin, drinking, walking around, posing for camera, obviously a little happy. What else besides that, I don't know. It's all alleged, but Patrick Kane went drinking, and now everybody wants him to stop drinking, Dieter.
Yeah. It's a very interesting, just kind of sitting back and watching, this organism of a story kind of develop has been fascinating to me, because it has gone through at least three or four public scrutiny cycles where – no one really noticed it. The grant, you know, one of the most
All right. I believe I'm on. Yes. All right, we're going to get Dieter back on. I don't know what happened there, but we lost Dieter. We'll get him back right now. I think everyone... It's like the good old days.
Hi, this is Dieter Kurtenbach.
Well,
I can't answer my phone right now, but you can leave me a message.
Well, we don't want to leave Dieter a message. All right, well, Dieter will get back on here in a second. But basically, to kind of wrap the story or set the table for what Dieter was going to go into there, basically, okay, here's Dieter. All right, hold on just a second. Basically, what happened is, as we said before, Deadspin got some pictures, and we really need a show producer. Okay. I'll improve all of this in post-editing, like there is such a thing. Deadspin got some pictures, and I think the remarkable part of this story to me, and I think Dieter's going to get into it when he jumps back on here in a second, is Deadspin then goes, okay, so they have these pictures, and then they go and they say, hey, we've heard some pretty remarkable stories about what happened this particular weekend with Patrick Kane, so if you were there and you happened to see any of this, drop us a line and tell us what, you know, your version of what happened. So now you have a bunch of anonymous people or Twitter people that say, oh, yeah, I was there and this is what I saw. I mean, they're already being led down a path by Deadspin by saying, well, this is kind of what's going, you know, this is what we hear happened. And then you have all these people that are sort of piggybacking on top of it and giving their supposed versions of what they saw. And I think it's just the funniest thing to me. It's like a bunch of drunk people giving their accounts of somebody else's drunken escapades. I mean, and you know, you have people and not just bloggers. I mean, there's real, you know, columnists and writers throughout the country that have picked this up. And I think we're going to try to call Dieter here again. But, I mean, it's just a remarkable thing that this has gotten as big as it has. And
I don't know what that is.
I don't know either, but whatever happened, we both got dropped. So,
oh, yay.
Yeah, so this is back like episode 12 of The Third Man In.
Oh, this is great. It's like I never left.
So go ahead. I said a whole lot and didn't really say a whole heck of a bunch, but you can continue.
Oh, just like every Chicago columnist regarding Patrick Kane. That's the overall gist. The entire thing is a joke. He's 23 years old. He went out drinking. In the era of camera phones, you can't really do that and expect no scrutiny. But if I had some based facts, I'd be more inclined to read into it. I think there's a line drawn between people trying to make a hockey issue out of a personal issue and people making personal issues out of hockey, and this one is an incredibly blurred situation in which I can't really pinpoint what the real crux of everyone's problem is. And basically, I feel like for some this is an excuse for it's an opportunity. I should not use the term excuse. An opportunity for many to jump on an inconsistent, possibly enigmatic hockey player. For this is the root of why he's not Wayne Gretzky, and for others, it's I think an extreme form of jealousy. And you know. Could Patrick Kane have played this better? Of course. It has nothing really to do with him, though. It has everything to do with other people. And this is it just feeds whatever anyone wanted it to be, in their opinions of Patrick Kane, has only been enforced. If you didn't give a damn about Patrick Kane drinking and partying, because this is not the first or the second or the third time that this kind of crap has come out, if you didn't care about it, then, you know, this doesn't change your mind. This is a better example of it. I fall on that boat. I don't feel like it's, you know, any of my business, and I don't see a, I can't, you know, factually speak to a correlation between the two of them, and it doesn't, or it, between, you know, bad play and off-field, off-ice conduct, that would be irresponsible of anyone to assume the correlation between the two of them. And if you already care, if you already, if you know, for whatever reason, whether you don't like it, you know, when hockey players or sports stars aren't saints, or you don't like, you know, alleged malfeasance on Patrick Kane's part, which is alleged from anonymous people, and I find it a bit ridiculous that in an area where police are incredibly prevalent to the point where we have photos of Patrick Kane walking past police, that some sort of violence was happening with a professional hockey player, that more than one person wouldn't file some sort of a grievance. During that same weekend, Monty Ball, the Wisconsin running back, was arrested for trespassing for not leaving a porch. So obviously the people in Madison don't seem to have an issue with standing up to celebrity and you know, involving police. So I don't read anything into it. I think that this is, as you pointed out earlier, a lot of ado about nothing, possibly brought on by an early off season for the Blackhawks and people not wanting to admit that it's baseball season because both teams suck.
It gives you know, individuals an opportunity to jump up on top of their morality pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes,
you know, it's like you said, if Patrick Kane, and I don't even want to mention the things that he's supposedly alleged doing, because, again, as you mentioned, if Patrick Kane really did those things, and everyone, you know, so many people, apparently, that have, that have written into Deadspin, said that they were there, you know, all these people were aware of Patrick Kane, what he was doing, well,
yeah,
then why didn't they go get the police? If these people know who Patrick Kane is, and he did, you know, a few of these things that he supposedly alleged doing, then how come the police weren't involved? To me, it's all baseless. There's no weight to it, and I couldn't, you know, even as someone that really doesn't have to worry too much about what I write, even though I kind of do. I wouldn't even touch it. I don't see the point to touching it. And I know there are a lot of people that have. I think there's emotional Blackhawks fans that like to jump in on this. I think there's people that feel that they have to weigh in. They get pressure, whether it be from message board, commenters, emailers. They hear it on sports talk radio, and they feel like it's a real news story, and they have to weigh in on it. To me, it's not a story at all. And, I mean, listen, we're talking about it, but to me, I don't understand it. I just don't.
I totally agree with you on that. The morality of it is fascinating because, in fact, if you were witness to such a crime and did not report it to the proper authorities, which I'm going to go ahead and say is not Deadspin.com or TerezHilton.com, if you don't do that, that is, you are, you know, you're an accessory. You're morally, you're very complacent in what happened. So to claim you're on a higher moral ground than somebody, which I don't, you know, perhaps you are, but you should probably act upon those things. And what he's alleged to have done by those who will remain faceless, nameless, and possibly bodiless is pretty shocking, and I think because the sensationalism of it is such boredom and, you know, a lot of emotions, because there is a high level of disappointment in the Blackhawk community that you can, you know, it's still lingering as the playoffs continue. A disappointing first-round series, though not completely unexpected for those who can kind of take an objective viewpoint of it. And Yeah, I just don't quite understand how this thing still has wheels. This is still on the front page of Deadspin.com, which in 1 week, Deadspin went from this, you know, really like great watchdog, credible journalism thing with the whole Sarah Phillips situation to like, oh, we're right back to where we started from with why, you know, they're kind of a pariah inside of sports media. It was a very interesting week for Deadspin. I'm sure they don't give a damn how it's perceived one way or another. I still read them every day, so I guess, you know, they definitely don't care. But I'm just not sure if this is now the new norm for, I guess, hockey fandom and in the Blackhawks community, where everything is so emotionally based. And reason kind of takes, you know, second fiddle to sensationalism, and logic is nowhere to be found. And I'm starting to see more and more irrationality amongst those who kind of follow this team. And perhaps that's a removal from it and a lack of emotion regarding them. But I just feel like anyone who's worth their weight doesn't take a stance on this that has any sort of backing. We can take, I mean, this is great sports talk radio stuff because it's just fluff and fodder. And he said, that stuff flies in sports talk radio. But the more and more people who want to put a byline on top of some written word, which lasts a lot longer than the BS we spew or the BS that's spewed on the AM dial, that stuff lasts. And you Google that stuff in 10 years or whatever the heck we'll be using in 10 years. And to take the same, you know, to not give the same scrutiny of topic to, you know, whatever you put, you know, in writing is, I think, a mistake, just as this will blow over without any sort of substance or, you know, proof of truth. It will just be a lot of backlash over something that we don't know happened or not, and well, you know, what's the point of furthering that by, you know, or, you know, what's the point of cementing that in the annals of public lore by writing a column that, you know, the Blackhawks gave no comment to, Patrick Kane's not going to give a comment to. No one's commenting on this that has a name, a face, or a real story, because the Madison police certainly didn't do anything about any of these alleged crimes. It's, you know, aside from, hey, I want to hear a story, which is how Deadspin gets all these anonymous things, why don't you tell me a story, and we're not going to vet it at all. Aside from that, you know, general fiction call, which is what I like to call them, nothing stands up in this except for the photos, which, honestly, I found a great deal of enjoyment looking at the photos. Because that one where he's sad and walking away, just kind of, that was a Photoshopper's dream. But other than that, I don't think there's anything substantial to come out of this. And I'm sure that we haven't heard the end of it, though, because if Patrick Kane, a historically streaky player, has any sort of streak and just plays like he normally does, someone's going to blame this, and someone's going to say his off-ice conduct is somehow doing it, and it will be a, you know, continuation of factless and baseless opinion forming.
Transitioning, one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on is because, as we mentioned at the top of the show, you're now down in Florida, you know, and
yeah,
working and following professional teams and sports down there. So you're detached,
yeah,
as you just mentioned, you're kind of detached from this whole thing. And I think it's interesting to get someone who, you know, has been a passionate Blackhawks fan, is a Chicago transplant, that still does follow the team. I know that you do.
Oh, yeah.
To get your perspective kind of from afar on a lot of things going on. And I want to begin with what we talked about, Sam Felton and I talked about last week,
yep,
which is the most recent sort of stage or act of the Blackhawks, what is now becoming kind of known as a hockey operation soap opera,
mm-hmm,
you know, that kind of dates all – I mean, if you really want to date it back, I mean, just date it back to the point where Rocky – you know, Bill Wirtz passed away. Peter Wirtz,
yeah,
was stepping into the chair before Rocky Wirtz pulled it out from under him and took it himself. I mean, it really begins – that's where the story really kind of begins, this book anyway. And,
yeah,
you know, it kind of – you kind of move on to – you know, Dennis Savard kind of being allowed to take his team and just being set up to fail, and Joe Quenneville sitting over his shoulder, then Dale Tallon getting the boot for something that really wasn't, you know, something that, you know, I mean, it was under his watch, I guess, but it wasn't really his fault. And now we fast forward to just a fascinating summer, I think, and that in the end of the end of the year press conference, you have Stan Bowman standing up on the podium, basically placing everything on coaching and Corey Crawford needs to be better. Those were the only things, at least publicly, that Stan Bowman is saying that were went wrong with his team, were the reasons why his team did not move past the first round in the Phoenix Coyotes. There are a lot of things, you know, and I want to get your perspective on it, but Patrick Kane, we just talked about him. Stan Bowman says, well, I think Patrick Kane should be the center. Then you have Joe Quenneville step up on the podium and saying, well, I'm not so sure about that. You clearly have a coach and a GM that are not on the same page. You have a GM that wants to fill out his coach's lineup card. And you fast forward a week and a half, and you had a situation where Joe Quenneville, who has the power to hire and fire his own coaches, gets told that there's dysfunction on his coaching staff. So what does Joe Quenneville do? He fires the guy that everybody thinks or assumes is going to be his ultimate successor in Mike Havlin. It's a fascinating thing, and I just wanted, you know, I guess just start where you want this saga.
Well, my I have to be careful with how I phrase things, but I have never been a fan of Mr. Stan Bowman. He has done things correctly in some areas, but I feel like the negatives far outweigh the positives. It's my understanding that the Dale Tallon RFA situation, and this is what I've heard from people who know it better than I do, and you know, I can only go as far as the sources gave it, but that the culpability for that situation is on Stan Bowman. And Dale Tallon lost his job over not being a good enough boss of Stan Bowman and saying, okay, this needs to happen, this needs to happen, and this, you know. He didn't keep a watchful eye on little Stan, and Stan messed up, and then Dale got fired for it. And that doesn't seem all that out of the ordinary. It was a huge blunder, and a head had to roll. And the GM's head, I guess, in this situation was it. Just something seemed wrong when you hear that story, and then obviously it didn't work out in this exact order, but when Stan Bowman, who was responsible for the act, as far as I'm aware, of screwing up the RFA situation in 2009, is then promoted because he is the successor to Dale Tallon in the seat, something was up. And you have to wonder. And knowing the dynamic of that Blackhawks front office with Tallon not being in, I'm not quite sure how Quenneville seems to be in both different camps. He was obviously brought in by the front office to, as you pointed out, look over the shoulder of Denny Savard, and as soon as Denny Savard screwed up, Quenneville was put in. Now it seems like the tables have turned. I'm fascinated because my personal bias against Stan Bowman is very, you know, the story that I can web together is fascinating when it comes to how much of a screw-up he's been. You look at, I mean, this is not the first time, even when you look at it, that they've been wanting a wing to play center on the team. They did this with Patrick Sharp, an experiment that worked out in the short term, and but obviously was not a long-term solution. Now they're asking Patrick Kane for it to be a long-term solution. Obviously there's discord between Bowman and Quenneville. I thought it was very interesting that Havlin got fired. I thought it was even more interesting that some people believed that that was Quenneville's doing and not, and that he was in full control over his coaching staff situation, and that it wasn't a mutual decision at best, or that the bullet was, you know, the gun was taken out of the hands of Quenneville when it came to his coaching staff, and in fact the bullet was put into Avalon's job by Bowman, or if you want to get into really deep conspiracy theories, that this is something that's been alleged before on a different team, that John McDonough, in fact, runs the show top to bottom, and everyone's just kind of a puppet in that situation. And the more and more that John McDonough has been involved with this team, it seems the more and more discord has arisen. And over the last 2 years, that would seem counterintuitive because there was plenty of discord before a Stanley Cup. There was a there's discord after a Stanley Cup. And now, you know, 2 years removed from that now, there seems it just seems to be piling on and piling on and piling on. And I'm just very interested in how this front office is going, because the one man who really is the most powerful man at the Chicago Blackhawks is not Rocky Wirtz, and it's definitely not Stan Bowman, who was, you know, my understanding is generally McDonough's boy. It's, in fact, John McDonough, and you don't hear much from him anymore. And the less you hear from him, the more seems to be screwed up. So I don't know what comes about here. What I do know is that slowly but surely an irrevocable change is probably going to happen here. When you look at the Blackhawks from 2009, the middle of 2009, when Quenneville took over, you look at that Blackhawks team that the foundation of a Stanley Cup champion was there, and you were going to look at it, let's say, the 3-4 years later, let's go All-Star break of next year's 2013 All-Star game. It will be, I don't think that anything will look the same, except for Jonathan Toews is a really good hockey player and Duncan Keith, you know, their contracts, the contracts have been peculiar. And there's just been a lot of decisions that you look at it and you say, from a hockey standpoint, not a good hockey decision. It doesn't build a Stanley Cup winning team, which they know how to build. Perhaps Stan Bowman doesn't specifically know how to build it, because the foundations of the 2010 Stanley Cup team were built from Dale Talon's blueprint, but there's a clear blueprint on how to do it, and a lot of those same players, in fact, the cornerstone players on that team, are all still there. And when it comes to things like, okay, now you have Patrick Sharp and Marian Hossa and Keith and Seabrook and Toews and Kane, and they all have to get paid what is their, you know, their fair value, you're finding, I think, with this team that their lack of desire to make a tough but prudent hockey decision in letting one or two of those players go to create a deeper, stronger team. And in my opinion, that's for marketing purposes. Their, you know, their lack of a backbone to make that decision will be the end of them.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because, you know, there's two things. A lot of people, and piggybacking kind of off of what we were talking about earlier, a lot of people right now suggesting, and of course the rumor mongers are out there, Patrick Kane should be the one to go, that Patrick Kane, jump on this decision now, move, you know, I don't know that there is a return out there that makes that an intelligent maneuver at all.
Nope.
Patrick Kane is, you know, I think the one thing, like, you know, and again, If what happened in Madison, you know, as far as we know, he went out and he got drunk. The playoffs have been over for a week, 2 weeks when he did it, a week and a half. I don't know exactly, but it was just over. Hockey players take a month and a half, sometimes 2 months to unwind, you know, after the season. As long as he's not getting blitzed every single night, it's not hurting him. So, you know,
he's well within his rights to go out and do that. If no crimes are committed, and we're talking serious crimes, not jaywalking or being publicly intoxicated, I'm 23 years old. I'm very thankful that I've never been arrested. I live a very clean life, but I'm damn pleased that there's not a, you know, bunch of cell phone cameras snapping a picture everywhere I go. So I can only imagine what it's like for Patrick Kane just being 23 years old, which is not, we're, you know, we're not kids, but we're not exactly, you know, watching Netflix every night either. It's, there's a weird balance, and it's, you know, maybe my perspective is a bit different, but he's well within his rights to go out and play hockey, and no one's ever accused him of going out and getting blitzed every night. No one's accused him of being, you know, out of line with his with drinking. So to jump on that and say that's the reason he should be traded, that he should go, is it's a preposterous notion. There's nothing you can get for Patrick Kane, and you know the one rumor that continues to come up no matter what is this Patrick Kane for Ryan Miller situation. Well, that's not a fair trade to the Chicago Blackhawks. Patrick Kane has the ability to be one of the great perimeter players in the history of the NHL if he's not already the best half-board player the league has. You're not going to get, and with his contract number, you're not going to get a fair value for Patrick Kane. So to trade him for something that, you know, not wrong, you know, it's ludicrous. I guess I'm happy in some senses because when I made the allegation, I wouldn't say it's an allegation, but I conjured up the thought that a lot of these decisions are made for marketing purposes. Well, I'm glad that the marketing purposes don't go as far as to, try to mitigate a bad PR situation with Patrick Kane by trading him away for lesser value. I'm glad that it doesn't go that far, but it doesn't seem like it's that far away from it. It definitely crossed my mind that it could happen, and that's not a good thought. That's not a lot of confidence in your team when that thought comes across your mind. Oh, this looks really bad. We should probably trade away a superstar right winger because this doesn't look good. And the number one person on the list of players who should be traded is Patrick Sharp because he has the highest trade value. His numbers are good enough to be moved. He is, believe it or not, I know that some people who might be looking with their eyes more than they are with their hockey senses, he is replaceable on this hockey team, very much so. You can't trade a guy like Hossa. You certainly cannot trade a guy like Taves, who is a future Hall of Fame player, in my opinion. I don't think that Keith's contract is worth moving, and I don't think you get a fair value on Brent Seabrook because he's the best defenseman on the team. But you got to move one of those big-ass contracts, and Patrick Sharp is, in my opinion, his numbers would not be as prolific as they are with the Blackhawks if he doesn't have a centerman like Jonathan Toews feeding him the puck whenever they get the opportunity. I feel like the numbers are inflated when those two get together. And not that he's not an exceptional hockey player, but he is not of the A-plus caliber of players that are untradeable.
I think the one thing that I'd say, though, on Sharp is that, you know, it's a difficult predicament that they're in right now. You know, if you were looking, and I don't think that they are, but if you were looking to trade a big contract like that, you have that uncertainty right now with Marian Hossa's health. And that would make it, you know, if Sam Bowman gets his way and Patrick Kane's your second line or 1A center, however it shakes out, and Marian Hossa doesn't make it back until January or, you know, even worse than that, then look at, you know, what you have on the wing. All of a sudden you've got Michael Frolik on your top line, and nobody wants that. So, you know, that's sort of, I do want to get back because, you know, when you look at, you know, everybody talks about the core, and, you bring up that all things being equal, if everybody was healthy, and let's say that Patrick Kane stayed on the wing and you found a center, you know, I could see there being an argument to, you know, if you're trying to shake things up, spread the roster around a little bit with, you know, maybe some better players in other positions, that, yeah, Patrick Sharp could bring you a lot in return. But there is the thought, and I think that it's, you know, it's not baseless, that, you know, from the top on down – they've identified that core, and for somewhat for marketing purposes, but also just this is a group of guys that won the Stanley Cup, and you have a fandom, probably half of which jumped on when that thing got hot, you know, and I'd say towards the tail end of the 08-09 season is when the Blackhawks really started to get hot. And, you know, that Marty Hablett, he was replaced by Marian Hossa, and this group won it together. And I can see the marketing brain of John McDonough sort of spinning and saying, listen, how are we going to explain to people if we trade one of these guys and it doesn't work out? And I could see them not wanting to touch those guys and just being content with, well, this is the group, and we've got 5 years with these guys before we really have to address anything.
Yeah, no, I think that's clearly it. It's a ballsy move. A ballsy move to move one of them. And that's compounded by the fact that I have no – it takes a ballsy move and a damn good general manager to make the right hockey decision. But I think it's been – I think that the last 2 years with first-round exits, and I am not putting a lot of stock in a seven-game series to the Canucks the year before this. There's just something about a rivalry. You just throw it out the window, and I feel like that team was, you know, that team was a lot closer to the one that was down 3-0 than the team that, you know, went to overtime in a seventh game. It would just take a really ballsy move, but this team has very little depth, and they've tried to go along with this 2000. What was the year that the Lakers got Karl Malone and Gary Payton, and they tried to make it work?
Peter, don't ask me a basketball question.
I'm just saying. The point is, they grab these old guys or these people who are unproven. It's a Miami Heat mentality. We got these three guys, one of them not being very good, in Chris Bosh. And we're going to just stick some shit around them and hope that, you know, we can just get by on the great talents of a few. And that's never worked in hockey. You can ask Alex Ovechkin and Nick Backstrom how that's working. You know, when you look at teams that win the Stanley Cup, they are deep. And they go four lines deep. And they can roll those lines at any time. And the Chicago Blackhawks haven't been able to do that since the 2010 Stanley Cup. And you knew there was going to be attrition from that team. You knew you were going to lose a guy like Dustin Byfuglien. You can replace a guy like Dustin Byfuglien. I understand that he's a difficult player to replace, but you can replace him. A guy like Chris Versteeg, it hurts me to say it because I like Versteeg as a guy and I like him as a hockey player, but when Chris Versteeg's on your third line, you have a really good team, but you can get guys like Chris Versteeg. Chris Versteeg came out of nowhere. That means he's basically replaceable. He's not some sort of prolific talent that's once in a generation. You just look at some of the guys, and that 2010 team was, yeah, I remember saying it in 2010, this is as good as it will ever get. But that 2010 team was a juggernaut, and they were a dynamo. They went to six games with the Flyers, but they were the better team in every series they played. And it was really the mentality, at least the way I looked at it when I saw that team play hockey, of who can beat them. And I don't see that really with any teams in the NHL right now. And the Blackhawks have an opportunity to do it, but they need to be deeper. And right now, they don't even have a second-line center. And I don't think that just getting a good second-line center changes everything, but you're running with a – their team right now is the team that's on the ice when they pulled the goalie. That's their team. They got four forwards, two defensemen, and whichever Nick Leddy decides to show up that night, and you're just, you know, you don't have a goalie that did it. I was on the anti-Nammy bandwagon for the 2010 season because when I saw the two of them play, I just thought they were better. I don't think that Crawford has true number one ability, and you need true number one ability on a team that's not deep. Duncan Keith needs to, you know, Duncan Keith is a very good player. He needs to get back to a level of greatness if he wants to be that. I don't think he's going to be capable of doing it because he has to carry too much of a load. Brent Seabrook is perpetually underrated, but even he had his brain farts last year because the load was so heavy on him. Nick Leddy is 21 years old now. He's expected to be the X factor on a team that doesn't really give him a lot to work with. Nick Jarmelson is the poster child for why the Bowman regime doesn't work. That was a total Bowman, and that it might be Scotty more than Stan. It was Scotty who said in 2009 that Nicholas Jarmelson is the next Nick Lidstrom, which is a quote that I still have saved and look at every now and again, just so I can kind of, bring down the legend of Scotty Bowman a little bit, because that is hyperbole personified. You look at just some of these signings, they're just trying to fill the roster with anything that can fit under a salary cap, and, they need to just take, what they need is they need six upgrades in the offseason. They need to upgrade at six different roster spots, at least. And that gets them back in the Stanley Cup. I mean, that's really hard to do when you're tied up with so much money in six guys and one of them is not in net, because a netminder can steal you a series. We saw that Jonathan Toews can get you damn close to winning a series almost single-handedly. These elite players that win Stanley Cups, they have help. You look at a guy like Crosby. Well, Crosby won a Stanley Cup. Well, he also has Evgeny Malkin, who is, in my opinion, as good of a player as Sidney Crosby. It's the reason I don't think the New York Rangers will win the Stanley Cup. But if the New Jersey Devils do this year, it wouldn't surprise me, because you have Zach Parise, a superstar, but he has Ilya Kovalchuk with him, and they have a solid, deep team with a guy like Adam Henrique. Who the heck is Adam Henrique? No one outside of, hockey nerds knows who Adam Henrique is, but he's one of the best players in the game right now. You look at the Kings. Kopitar has two foils and Richards, and that team is built on the Blackhawks prototype of, being able to roll four lines deep and having strong, mobile, stretch-passing defensemen and a goaltender that will stand on his head at the right times. That's the team to beat. Even the Coyotes, I don't know how they duct-taped a good team together, but that team's deep. That team rolls four lines. And you look at the teams that don't roll four lines, and they're pretty much screwed. And I think that the Rangers, being the team that can't roll four lines out of the, the semifinal teams, is will probably be their demise. They're kind of running on it. But you look at the guys who got all the pub from the Rangers as kind of the foils. You look at a guy like a Brian Boyle, or that kid out of BC. Those are guys that play playoff hockey. They're grinders. They tough it out. Who do the Blackhawks have that's a true NHL player, that's a tough guy, a grinder who can put his ass in front of the net and make things happen and score some dirty, ugly goals and just generally elevate himself to the physicality that happens in the Stanley Cup playoffs? I don't see it. I don't see it on the roster at all. And they need to go out and get NHL-proven guys who can go out and, make it happen late in the season and in the playoffs. And trying to piece it together with a bunch of AHL guys or a bunch of, maybe a change of scenery will help them out, or a bunch of speedsters on the wing just doesn't cut it. Trying to bring in old farts looking for one last go at a Stanley Cup isn't going to cut it. It seems a bit peculiar, but when the Blackhawks chose, I can't speak to it, but it was obvious to me that the decision, was pretty polarizing to me, at least, that when they went for Andrew Burnett instead of Steve Sullivan, that was kind of obvious, because Steve Sullivan had just gotten, he played in systems that valued two-way hockey. He might not have – he doesn't jump off of a stat sheet with you when it comes to, obviously size. He's a small guy, but he plays with a lot of heart. And if he just stays healthy, he can be the best player on the ice at certain points. And if you have a guy like Steve Sullivan on your third or fourth line – and I know you don't want to put him on a fourth line and that gets into it, but Steve Sullivan is a perfect third-line guy for a Stanley Cup contending team. And I know that the Penguins, poop the bed, but that team, there's a reason that everyone thought that they would be the Stanley Cup victor, and it's because that team was deep, and they knew they could play with some heart. And they're probably going to have to break up a little bit there too, and they're going to make that tough decision. They're not going to sign Jordan Staal to a massive contract. They will they'll continue to develop talent, which is something that I'm not seeing. The jury's still out on the Blackhawks with that. It's just tough. If I had to say who they're comparable to right now, I wouldn't say it's the LA Kings, and I wouldn't say it's the New Jersey Devils. I would say it's more like the New York Rangers, and the difference between the Blackhawks and the New York Rangers is, well, one of them has a much better goaltender. And even in that case, I don't think that it's going to be enough for the Rangers to win a Stanley Cup, because he's not even the best goaltender in the playoffs right now. So tough hockey decisions have to be made, because I think anyone who looks at this Blackhawks team and says this is working or this will work is fooling themselves, especially Blackhawks fans, because they know what it takes to win a Stanley Cup. And they can look at other teams that won Stanley Cups and say that's kind of the same formula. And to kind of, it's idiotic to do the same thing over and over again and expect different results. So a tough hockey decision has to be made, and it needs to be made as a hockey decision, not a PR decision. And I don't think that's something that the Blackhawks are capable of doing. And if they were capable of doing it, I don't think the right man's in charge to make a tough and prudent hockey decision. The one thing I learned about Dale Tallon this year that really enlightened me to garnered even more respect than I think I already had for him, is the man's got some brass-plated balls. I mean, he is a tough SOB, and that's how he played as a player, and that's how he is as a GM. And it's not this Brian Burke fake, I'm a dick persona. He traded David Booth, who was the franchise for this team. He got rid of a Nathan Horton when he came in. That's the guy. And he just said, I'm bringing in my guys. I'm bringing in guys who can play tough. And he doesn't have that star power yet. He doesn't. And when Stephen Weiss is leading your team, you kind of have a tough go. But he clearly has a plan in place for that team to be very competitive, because they'll be able to roll four lines. And he got it, And everyone in that organization, from top to bottom, is on the same page. And you know that when you can fake it a little bit, but that's got to really be the case. Either you need to have prolific talent that can overcome any sort of dysfunction in the house. And I believe that the Blackhawks had that going in 2010. I mean, that was an all-time great team. Or you need to be on the same page from top to bottom in the organization. And you see it in a lot of places. I think it's going on in Florida. I don't know if they're ever going to win a Stanley Cup, because there's just certain things you can't control. But it's not even close to being the case in Chicago. And just because you have a couple of really great players doesn't mean that everything's going to work out for the best. I'm very interested to see where it goes from here. But right now, my confidence in the organization to win another Stanley Cup, in the time frame that you put out there, 5 years, it gets lower by the day.
A couple of things. I think one of the things that really no one's talking about, and maybe they just don't have, I'll just say it. With the promoting from within that's gone on here in Chicago, and it's kind of mirrors the old regime, and that you don't even take a look outside the organization, it seems. When a job opens up, they just, the next guy in line takes a step up the ladder. I think one of the things that no one's talking about, and the Blackhawks, I've talked about it with Al Samaglia at length, one of the things that concerns you about the Blackhawks, and you talk about these signings, these free agent signings the past couple of years, their pro scouting appears to leave something to be desired. And two of their best talent evaluators this summer have moved on and are no longer in talent evaluating positions, and one being Marc Bergevin, who's gone on to Montreal, of course, and now their GM, and Norm McIver, who's now in that assistant GM's role. Those guys are no longer on hand talent evaluators, and that's a big deal. Norm McIver's a guy that's gone out, no matter, you know, these guys have struggled, but these guys are aimed to be the future of the defense. Nick Leddy and Dylan Olsen, I mean, that's, he went out and identified those guys and got those guys. Marc Bergevin.
You want to know what the binding thing of those two guys are?
Yep.
They're Talon guys.
Yeah.
They're Dale Talon guys. They're cleaning house from the Dale Talon regime. And it was, I don't know if it's a hubristic thing or if it's just kind of circumstance of Dale's gone and, you know, the circumstances of Dale Talon's firing still are mysterious to me, because again, we're not sure why Dale Talon got fired for something that might not have been his fault. And now that all the Dale guys are leaving and anyone who has a Dale Talon tag attached to them is on the hot seat, it's tough. Dale Talon built that Stanley Cup team. Dan Bowman just put a Band-Aid on a couple spots that you can't even blame Talon for. So,
well, it's a Scotty Bowman show as much as it is Stan. I mean, they're head scouts. I mean, I talk about their pro head scout. I mean, not in title, but their top pro scouts really are Scotty Bowman and Barry Smith. Those are their top pro scouts. When they have to send somebody out to evaluate something, you know, the guys, the soldiers that are out there doing the grunt work will look at a player, identify someone, send in their reports, and then it's like, okay, we need a final decision, or we needed another set of eyes. Who gets sent? It's Barry Smith. It's Scotty Bowman.
Yes.
Or in the past, it's been Bergevin and McIver. Well, now those guys are not in those positions anymore. So it's like, and no disrespect meant to Scotty Bowman, but is Scotty Bowman in, you know, his old age? Is he slipping? You know, I mean, I don't know who's making these decisions of these guys coming in. I think that it's going to be very interesting this off season. We will know how serious they are about winning a Stanley Cup, because I do believe, while I like some of the Blackhawks prospects, none of them, definitely aside from Shaw, have earned the right to stake a claim pre-camp to a roster spot next year. So with that in mind, if I'm the GM, I'm not saving spots for any of those guys. As nice of kids as they are, as maybe sometimes as good as they look in spots, I'm not saving roster spots for any of those guys if I don't have to, or if I'm not forced to. And I think that, you know, the cap space was there this time. Stan Bowman just didn't want to trade prospects for players. That was it. He didn't want to trade prospects for players. And that's the reason why he didn't upgrade at the deadline and use that cap space that he got for Brian Campbell that he said he was going to use. So if they're aggressive in improving the areas that need to be improved, they don't just sit back and say, you know what, Brian Bickle, you know, like I've seen some people say, Brian Bickle, contract year, nice contract. But you know what? Brian Bickle in a contract year is going to try to score 30 goals, and he's not going to do all the things that you need Brian Bickle to do. Brian Bickle is the reason why Andrew Shaw comes up in the lineup and looks so damn good. Because he's doing something that a guy like Brian Bickle, you know, just on a consistent basis, just doesn't do. And I think it's time, like I said, I've said this in a couple of weeks in a row now, it's time for, you know, you can get something for Brian Bickle because of that contract, and I think it's time to move on. It's time to stop waiting for Brian Bickle to be something that he's not. Those are the kind of decisions that need to be made this offseason. If you're going to keep the core, that's fine. I, you know, there's an argument to be made to keep the core. But if you're going to do that, then you have to make stern and authoritative and strong-minded decisions in other areas. Not just say, well, Andrew Brunette is you know, he's an aging veteran. He's looking for a place to one more chance, and he knows Coach Q, and this will be a good fit. No, make a strong-minded decision that's really going to help your hockey club, and that's the thing I think to keep an eye on this summer. Don't say, well, you know, Jeremy Morin will come up and grab a spot. Ben Smith will come up and grab a spot. No, make those guys earn spots and bring guys in that actually improve your hockey club from October 1st moving forward.
When you have a core like the Blackhawks do, and it's obvious that they're going to stick with the core, you have to be – your general managing skills are judged third and fourth line, second and third pairing. You have to be as good, if not better, with that. When you take off that much – for 5-6 players, you have to be so much better with the rest. You have to be so prudent and so diligent with the rest of that roster, and then that's how a great team is formed. But when you just allow yourself to say, okay, we got these great players, and we'll just try to piece it together here and there, that's lax general managing. And I don't know why the Blackhawks would have stuck, you know, I don't know what the right moves were. I'm not going to, you know, insinuate that they should have done this or done that and everything would have changed. But it seems as if they're riding this youth wave, which doesn't – I'm not really all that impressed with the Blackhawks youth. So it's kind of – I'm with you 100% on, you know, they need to get back to – they're not being run like a Stanley Cup contender. They're being run like a team that gets knocked out of the first round of the playoffs every year, because they're not there's no fire under ass. There's nothing. It's just you know, you guys, we won a Stanley Cup with this core and we're going to do it again, and you guys want to come along for the ride. It's just not how it works. That's not how the Detroit Red Wings work. That's not how the teams that contend every year work. And I can't explain exactly why that's the case.
Specific to last, the 2011-12 Blackhawks, maybe a couple of guys on both ends here. Your bright lights that you saw the season, maybe guys that stood out to you more than others, and also your bust from the season.
I like Saad. Saad, Sad, whatever you want to call him. I like his game. I think that he'll probably be a nice contender. One thing that I've really noticed kind of being removed from the situation a little bit is average play being treated like better than play, and that might be the Brian Bickle effect of, well, look at how much better he is than Brian Bickle, who's an everyday player. He must be amazing. Bickle is obviously a disappointment. I was really surprised with someone I haven't been – I was never enamored with being Victor Stone. I kind of came around on him a little bit this year. And I was really just whatever they threw on the third defensive pairing was disastrous. That they need to clean house. Frankly, they have a 1-2 and a 3 in Letty, Keith, and Seabrook. And Jarmelson's not cutting it, and definitely not at the number he's getting. And whatever you wanted to throw out there as the 5 and the 6. Weren't good. I don't know if youth is the correct way. I don't know if Olsen is fully ready yet. He could be. He'll probably end up having to be. But they need to go out and make a prudent, strong decision on guys who can fit the system, much in the way you look at a guy like Willie Mitchell, who everyone thought was kind of burned out. He's not great. He's not elite. But they need to kind of find their Willie Mitchell. They need to find another Brent Sobel. They need to find a guy like that who can go out there and give you the minutes and be a solid contributor and be kind of a physical force and just has a very clear skill set, make some mistakes every now and again. That's the reason why he's a fifth or a sixth defender. But you can trust to be in the lineup night in and night out, save for injury. And that's something that they didn't have really at either the four or either at the 5 or the 6. And whatever the scouting evaluation was going on at the tail end of the defenseman corps failed miserably last year. And they don't have enough talent, or they don't have enough players right now currently in place to fill that gap. So they need to – the defense corps was subpar to me.
Before we get going, I'd be remiss. You know, you've been covering the Florida Panthers, or did cover the Florida Panthers this season. The former Blackhawks. You know, you've covered these guys: Chris Versteeg, Thomas Kopechky, Skilly, Brian Campbell, of course. How are these guys? I guess specifically, first of all, how are these guys being received among Panther fans?
Panther fans are a very interesting bunch. It's pretty much the only blue-collar people in South Florida. There are plenty of blue-collar people, but it's just a very different mentality than Chicago. It's kind of tough to be angry about things or to get really upset about fifth and sixth man defense pairings when it's 80 degrees and sunny every day. Just brings on a different mindset. Campbell is you don't hear the bitching or whining about lack of defensive prowess, even though these are very good hockey fans. They're just limited in numbers. Those who go know, and they are not as up in arms about it because it's something that they've really lacked, at least any semblance of a two-way player at an offensive defenseman mindset. When you can go from Bomeister to Brian Campbell, that's a pretty significant upgrade, and he's been treated as such. Thomas Kopechky is polarizing as he ever was, as he ever has been. Some people who are tastemakers or opinion formers in South Florida are very high on him. I continue to be perplexed by his play. Nice guy, you know. He's a third liner on a really good hockey team, and he was asked to be a first line player and second line player, and then in the playoffs, a fourth line player. He's earning his salary, and I feel like you know, Panthers fans don't really want for much more than what they've received. This has kind of been a miracle year for them. Not that it was a miracle by any stretch of the imagination. This was a good hockey team coming in that should have been in the position they were in. But he's received well, if not bringing a high level of confusion. Versteeg fits in so well down here. He went on a pretty tough streak that was, you know, now that hindsight is available. He never admitted that he was injured for an extended period of time. He played through a lot of pain. You could tell there were points when he wasn't able to score even in practice on empty nets because his shoulder was bothering him so much. And then he was having wrist injuries and groin issues, and he was all over the place with injuries. But his kind of flowing locks lifestyle is very, very well received down here, and he's a damn good hockey player. And he, you know, that top line with him, Fleischman, and Weiss really were doing some great things at a couple points this year, and they just kind of weren't able to all piece it together in the playoffs. Fleischman being injured at the same time was a problem. Jack Skilly is the exact same hockey player. Dale Talon is still enamored with him. The one bone I will pick with Dale, but he plays his heart out, and you know, you saw a couple times this year that he put together a really nice game, and you know, on a team like the Florida Panthers, that will get you on the fourth line in the lineup. So, am I missing anybody else? It seems like everyone was on the damn Blackhawks at one point when you put the Blackhawks. And John Madden was beloved. John Madden. Really, he's more of a former Devil than a former Blackhawk, but if we're going along guys who have played in Chicago, John Madden was, after he got off all the rust in the playoffs, John Madden was really, really excellent. And him taking, I believe actually he ran into Kopechky during game 7 of the Eastern Conference quarterfinals and really cut up his face, which was a very Thomas Kopechky thing to do. But he just a warrior, and people really took a liking to him, and he was playing really exceptional hockey for John Madden. And what you considering he was picked up off the scrap heap at one point this year, he was playing out of his skates for a while there, and I don't believe he'll be back, but he will be surely missed by Panthers fans.
Last thing, we talked a little bit earlier about improving the Blackhawks defense, and there is a salary cap, and I don't think the Blackhawks are going to spend $7-8 million on a guy like Ryan Suter. The top suitors for Ryan Suter out there would be, of course, would be Detroit and Philadelphia. And but when you look at sort of lesser guys, you watched one of them down there, UFA coming up, Jason Garrison, left-handed
mm-hmm.
shot, plays the left side, which is something that the Blackhawks need. Most of their defensemen prefer or better on the right-hand side, Dylan Olsen, Nick Leddy, the two young kids that are going to, you know, I don't know. I don't think anything's guaranteed to Olsen, but Leddy for sure. So you're looking for a left-handed shot from the left side. And Jason Garrison, bomb of a shot. Blackhawks mm-hmm. fans don't know a whole heck of a lot about him. You watched him all season long. He played with Brian Campbell. So I think that's the concern, is that exactly how, you know, the guy comes out of, I wouldn't say out of nowhere, but
he was undrafted.
He has a career season in his contract year. Tell us a little bit about Jason Garrison and how you would see him potentially fitting in as a Blackhawk.
Jason Garrison would be an excellent number three or number four option for Chicago Blackhawks. He would fit in so very well with a guy like Duncan Keith. It crossed my mind at some points during the regular season. There's nothing flashy about him except for the fact that he will destroy shins with his slap shot. He plays a simple offensive game, a simple defensive game. He goes a lot of times, save for a power play, completely unnoticed, which is for a third or fourth defenseman, in many ways, a compliment. And I take it in a very complimentary sense when I say that about him. I don't think that this year was a fluke by any stretch of the imagination. I don't know if his ceiling is that much higher than the 16-goal season he put up, but the kid has he's not really a kid. I mean, he's a man. You don't have to worry about him. He's not injury-prone, but he does get injured. He's not a big, hulking guy, but he is strong as hell. He is one jacked dude. He could probably stand to take the body more often, but then again, he is about 6 foot tall and not exactly a mean streak kind of player. His intermediate to long passing game leaves a little bit to be desired, but it's there. He can make the tape-to-tape. It comes down to do teams believe that his ability to clear out the front of the net is good enough, because I would assess him as average in his own defensive zone and above average on the offensive side. He's not a power play quarterback, but he is a power play finisher. There's just a lot of things that I'm not quite sure what the value of him will be. He's kind of, I threw out the name Christian Ehrhoff the other day. I don't believe he's to that same monetary value, but I don't think he's far off when it comes to contract valuations. Whoever loses out on Ryan Suter is going to be looking to kind of make up for that. And it's very easy to sell someone who has a 100-mile-per-hour slap shot and scored 16 goals from the blue line last year as an improvement, because he will be an improvement. The Blackhawks would be well served to get him. Anything above $3.25 million would be high in my just the way I see it, and I think that he'll probably get close to $4 million. I'm not sure that the Panthers are going to let him go. They have a lot more cap room to work with. They're not keen on going out and getting a big name this offseason because they have a kid named Jonathan Huberdeau, who was their number three pick last year's draft. The kid's got some sick mitts, and he's going to be the top-line center by the All-Star game next year. Just unbelievable talent. He needed to put on 20 pounds in junior this year. Apparently he's done that. Outstanding player in the Memorial Cup and plays very well for Canada when he's healthy. Freak injury got him, I believe, for World Juniors. But, anything above 3.25 would be a little bit too much. I guess the Nick Jarbelson contract would be a great evaluator. You know, all the potential they talk about with Nick Jarbelson, oh, this is what he could be offensively, this is what he will be defensively. I feel like Nick Jarbelson is the ceiling of what people thought Nick Jarbelson would be, say, for Scotty Bowman. Is pretty much what Jason Garrison is right now, and he'll probably remain the same for a while. And so that's basically where you want to put him, at 3.25. Anything more than that's probably not worth it, and the Blackhawks aren't in a position to spend more than they have, and I would say that that's pretty much what they have to spend on a blue liner. So I'm not one of these guys in the camp who thinks that he's a bad buy. I just feel like the unrestricted free agency overvalues players based on you got to go out and get something. It's an auction, and auctions are usually not good for getting fair value on things, especially when there's a limited supply in commodities. Other guys that I can see the Blackhawks making a move on, people have said Weidman. I think that's a silly decision. I wouldn't be opposed to bringing back Johnny Oduya at a lesser contract value. I don't think that's feasible. A guy like Matt Carl in Philadelphia would be a great fit. He made 3.4 last year. If you can get him at, 3.5, that's a great move. 27 years old, good guy. I really like the way he plays. A Carlo Koliakovo, it's not a bad move. You can get him at a good price. I'm still holding out that someone wises up and gets a healthy Sammy Salo. I don't know if he can still play, but when Sammy Salo is going, he's a top defenseman, and he wasn't making a lot last year, and I've always found him to be undervalued. Sheldon Surrey played his way into another NHL contract. He might be good at a value. But other than that, I don't see a lot of guys that are obvious decisions that are, you've got to go out and get him. He's going to make, I think that Garrison would probably be high on the Blackhawks list, and I'm not sure that they're in the right position to get him, but if they could, that'd be a really good move. And I'd have to give a lot of credit to Stan Bowman if they were able to pull it off for somewhere in the 3.25 area.
All right, Dieter, and we should point this out, I think most people will be listening to this on Tuesday. Tuesday, yep. May 15th, is the, you want to call it an anniversary, you can go ahead. It's the 45th anniversary, or 45 years to the day, that an angry Tommy Ivan got together with an angry Arthur and Bill Wirtz and traded Phil Esposito, Ken Hodge, and Freddie Stanfield to Boston for Pitt Martin, Jack Norris, and Gilles Marat. So if you want to trade Kane, tomorrow would be the day to do it, I think.
Yeah, if you want to trace back the beginning of the Blackhawks' problems, maybe we can go back to that day.
Yeah, so keep that in mind when you're trying to trade, those of you who are trying to trade Patrick Kane, keep that trade in mind. That's 45 years, May 15th, 1967. So, Dieter, again, South Florida Sun Sentinel, at D.
Yep.
Kurtenbach on Twitter. And
yep.
Thanks again for joining us. We're going to have you again pretty soon. And, of course, when you're in town, Dieter, let me know. We'll go out and I don't know if anybody will be following us around, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe we can make some Patrick Kane memories, or lack thereof.
Yeah. All right, Dieter, thanks a lot for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take it easy.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, I believe, with Steven Nelson, the pre and post and in-game radio host for the Rockford IceHogs this past season. We're going to be talking about Rockford IceHogs hockey, Blackhawks prospects in that. I believe that's next week. I got to double check with him, and I'm sure he would love the fact that I'm promoting him before I book him, but he is coming on pretty soon, and I believe it's going to be next week. Again, thanks everybody for listening. Good night, everybody.
Myself a mansion and I gave it all away. It's not the world that's heavy, it's just the things that you save. And I'm drifting, drifting away. Drifting, drifting, drifting along. I rid myself of worries and my worries were gone. I only run when I want to and I sleep like a dog. I'm drifting. Not paid, it's good for
feel like going back there, but never for long. I sometimes wonder if they know that I'm gone. I'm drifting, drifting along.